In the matter of Gilberto M. Garcia, we have Ryan Moriarty on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics and Mr. Garcia representing himself. Mr. Moriarty, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Good afternoon, Associate Justice of the Court. May it please the Court. We are here today in response to the Court's June 30th, 2020 order to show cause following the January 23rd, 2020 decision by the Disciplinary Review Board finding that the respondent violated RPC 1.5B and RPC 7.1A. The OAE agrees with the findings of the board as well as the recommendation for discipline of a censure. The OAE also notes that this case, although analogous to the prior findings of violations of RPC 7.1A, is somewhat different as the misrepresentations by a respondent were specifically targeted at an individual client where the other instances were instances of broad advertisements or uses of letterhead. So the OAE understands if the court were to depart from the prior jurisprudence, that being in the range of an admonition to a censure and imposing a higher level of discipline. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the court may have.
Zettelman, please unmute.
Thank you. Counsel, what was the discipline imposed by New York?
There was no discipline imposed by New York. There was a finding after the initial appeal where they opened up a case, but they ultimately closed it after the appeal, which found that Mr. Garcia was ineffective, was overturned by the next higher level of their appellate process.
Counsel, in any of the earlier cases that you're arguing, you know, from by analogy, was the targeted communication geared to someone who was represented by another attorney at the time?
No, Justice Lavecchia. In those situations, they were all broad. They were advertisements through the Yellow Pages. There was one instance or two instances where they were usage of letterheads where attorneys were included, or the one was a law student who had not passed the bar. Another was an attorney from California, not barred in New Jersey. So those were broad advertisements, which could be perceived
by a
larger.
This is the first time, counsel, this is the first time the court's dealing with misleading communications that are arising in the context of disrupting an ongoing lawyer-client relationship.
I could not say it any better, Justice Lavecchia, yes.
Okay, thank you. I thought so, I wanted to be sure.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add, Mr. Moriarty?
No, thank you.
Then we'll hear from Mr. Garcia, please.
Good afternoon, Associate Justices and Chief Justice of the Court. May it please the Court. I would like to say that I do agree with the argument that has, the discussion that has occurred here. And it reminds me of a decision by this honorable court in the Nostrame versus Santiago case, 213 NJ 109, a 2013 decision, where this type of allegation is synonymous with violations of Rule 7.1, as well as fraud, misrepresentation, a higher degree of a tort that requires specific pleadings. I am aware of my actions and the consequences of my actions. I took on a case, murder case. No murder case is easy. I did not have trial experience. The circumstances of the case brought me to make a decision of a noble challenge in my career, and as a result, I've had to pay the consequences. One thing I know, I did not in any circumstance, at any given time, enhance my murder trial experience, because there is none. And I made that very clear to my clients, the circumstances under which I took on this case.
Did you ever, Mr. Garcia, had you ever tried a criminal jury trial case before undertaking this murder case?
Yes, Your Honor, in the Southern District of New York.
A criminal case?
Yes, sir. In 1995. Your Honor, I did not have the experience that most attorneys would consider required to do this.
Let me ask you this question. This is simple. Because you said this was a noble challenge. The defendant in this case was represented by experienced counsel, an attorney who had tried 20 jury trials. He couldn't have been more experienced. He had lined up expert witnesses, and he had a team of attorneys. And why would you undertake this noble challenge without having the requisite experience when the client already was properly represented by counsel who had apparently a strategy and the witnesses who he thought necessary to present a defense? Why would you do this?
Okay. The reason why I did it is I fell into it, or it fell in my lap. This highly experienced and respected counsel, because I have my respect for him, and I had my respect for him, and I demonstrated that to him, had told my client he was going to get convicted because of several issues. One of them, he didn't show up in a camera that he had said he had passed by. There were other issues that were being discussed regarding the weight of the evidence. And my client, you would have to know him, as a matter of fact, a week ago, it came out in Dateline again, an interview about him and the judgment of his personality. My client was not happy with that counsel. There were $72,000 owed to that counsel, and apparently the family and my client would not have sufficient funds to finance the trial. That's why I came in. And I promised, no experience, but I promised I would work very hard and that I would do something that's a little difficult, but I said, I'll be with you 100% all the way. You and I will call the shots. You will be as extremely involved, because he also was not involved with his counsel at a certain time, complaining that there were not sufficient visits to the jail and that they were asking for more and more and more money, and the family did not have those funds.
And how much did you charge the client?
I charged the client, although I prepared a retainer on an hourly basis, I made it clear to them I would do the whole case for $100,000 plus expenses, and I complied with my promise.
Mr. Garcia, what do you take away from this experience?
I love your question. I am resilient. I am at times courageous. But had I known what the consequences of my representation, even though the New York Court of Appeals said I was not ineffective, had I known that my peers were not going to believe me and were going to judge me for having taken on this endeavor when I should not have, I have to be honest and say I regret having done it.
So your answer focuses on the judgment of your peers. You understand that our review process focuses on harm to the clients, harm to the public. What do you take away from your experience with that in mind?
I do, Your Honor. I do not believe that I did any harm to my client. Perhaps, if someone looks at me and points out to me and says, you should not have taken on a murder trial, that was too much of a challenge, that I could understand. And I would have to admit, as a matter of moral principles, philosophy, that it was too high a hill to climb. However, I worked very hard, and as Mr. Seplovitz said, on his initial argument before the panel and then to the DRB, it was not about diligence. I worked very hard.
So but if I the...
do, Your Honor, I do agree that although I am certain by the New York Court of Appeals decision that I did not hurt my client, I did something I believed was noble. If I had to do it again, I would not do
it. Am I correct? You had to have a motion to appear pro hoc vice in New York in order to handle this case. And I believe your wife made that motion on your behalf. At any time during that application, was it made known to the court that you had never handled a murder trial before and you had one criminal trial in your background?
No, Your Honor. I do not believe that that was an issue, although, Your Honor, later on during an argument on one of the motions, the judge did, in fact, question and said to me, you know, you told me you don't have the experience, but that I should trust that you can do this work. And we had a discussion about it, and it was never brought up again. But no, there was no outright representation.
Okay. Other questions, anyone? Is there anything you'd like to add, Mr. Garcia?
I, again, need to see my actions and the consequences, and I do accept them. I do believe, again, I did it for very little money compared to the amount of work. I worked very hard, prevailed on many motions, and tried the case, a case where the weight of the evidence was substantial, overwhelming. I nevertheless gave my client 150% from my side. Now, if the issue is to I admit I should not have done it, despite my great intentions and my goodwill and my empathy for the circumstances in the matter. I also have argued, because I have been extremely concerned, I do understand this as a matter of fact, and I know, I am absolutely certain about the fact that it was very difficult for me to have taken on this matter and that I should not have. But I also know that I made no misrepresentations of any kind to anyone about having murder trial experience, because that just makes no sense whatsoever. This was hard enough as it was, and I have to live with it. It's very, very difficult. And I argued it before the panel. I even brought it up, as I stated in my brief, to the DRB because it had not been discussed. Because that is very painful. The fact that I might not have the proper judgment in taking on a matter so difficult, albeit the fact that I was found not to be incompetent or ineffective, but that put aside, I pain when I see that my colleagues, my peers, have determined that I lied, and that is very painful. That's why I argued, is the weight of the evidence here something that anyone's going to look at? There was only one allegation, one day, nothing else, never again. Everybody was satisfied. The text messages describe it, and does it have to be more than that? But that is as a matter of law. The questions that I have fielded here today don't seem to be as a matter of law, seem to be as a matter of life. And justices, you are correct in your questions. I should not have taken on this case.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. We'll take the matter under advisement.